gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Season 2 of Radio Teco. My name is Monty Rossetti. For Season 2, we're doing things a bit different. We're making it easier for you, the listener, to pick either a news episode or a culture episode. From now on, our new series will be called Latina, Latino, Latinx News. And for our culture series, check out Our Cultura podcast, both brought to you by our amazing team here at El Tecolote. For our first episode of Latina, Latino, Latinx News, El Tecolote contributor Mabel Jimenez and I have the pleasure of talking to Blue Wire Podcast Director of Communications, Megan Reyes. Not only is Megan doing amazing work for Blue Wire Podcast, she also has been spearheading an amazing campaign that focuses on more diversity within sports. Not only is she talking about Latinx voices, she's also talking about more women, Black, Indigenous, Asian, LGBTQ plus voices in sports. Let's have a listen to our chat with Megan. All right, the moment has arrived here. I'm excited for this episode. First off, I'm here with Mabel Jimenez, the contributor and co-host of this episode for El Tecolote. And I'm also here with our guest today, Megan Reyes. You are the Director of Communications at Blue Wire Podcast. And then also, as if that wasn't enough, you have created this amazing, amazing campaign talking specifically about more diversity within sports. So first off, my question to both of you, starting off with Megan, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you both for having me. Preparing for a work trip tomorrow, so looking forward to like a midweek break. As us three know, we were having pet issues prior, and so I am a two-week dog owner and looking forward to a slight 24-hour break from my lovable but very exhausting dog. So I'm doing wonderful.
Wait, is your puppy going to be ready for this? Like, what's going to happen? This seems like there might be some kind of separation anxiety.
She doesn't know what's coming. Oh, let's not get started on separation anxiety. Yeah. She doesn't know what's coming.
We won't tell her.
I'm doing wonderful.
One day you're there, one day you're not. And Mabel, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Congratulations, Megan, on your new puppy motherhood life.
Thank you.
And thank you, Monty, for inviting me on this episode. I'm warning you, Megan, this is my second episode that I'm co-hosting, so we'll see how this, we'll roll with it.
You're doing great. I have
faith. All good, I've done a few of these, and I still mess up here and there, so don't worry. We'll just blame it on me. It's okay.
But I know, excited to have this conversation with you, Megan, and Monty as well. But I'm really excited to have you as a guest in our show. And I think we're going to have a really good conversation. We're having conversations a lot about inclusivity and real inclusivity, not just surface level representation and diversity. And what does it look like for people who are normally marginalized to actually have some control and some say in other areas of life? And today we get to talk about that in sports. So thank you again for joining us.
So we'll go ahead and start the questions here. First off, nice and simple, Megan, how long have you been working in sports and how long have sports kind of been a part of your life?
So sports have been a part of my life for pretty much my whole life. I have an older brother. He played baseball growing up, high school, college, coached high school, and now actually to this day coaches my 13-year-old niece's softball team. So I was very ingrained in baseball. I mean, people would tell stories of like my parents bringing me to the baseball field as a baby. So I was always around sports, and I didn't know I wanted to work in the industry until I was in college. I just didn't know that it was like a career path, and it was never really something I had in mind. So I have been working in the industry in some type of capacity for 12 years since I was a freshman in college. So starting with internships and then, you know, working my way to more professional full time. But, you know, it really dates back to 2009 was when I first started working in sports.
And I have a question about, you know, you're talking about baseball and sports being really important to you growing up. And I've seen you mention in other interviews that, you know, your parents, they immigrated from the Philippines. And I've seen you talk about how sports was just, sports culture was such a big part of your family culture. Would you say that's right? And how, I'm interested in seeing how this sort of experience of having, of your parents being immigrants, and how that life, how did that intertwine with making sports part of that life as immigrants?
Yeah, I really like that question. So I had a similar conversation on a show, actually on my show that I'm working on with somebody about this, about how it's always interesting to see which teams and sports immigrant parents tend to choose. So people think it's so random, but my brother and my dad are huge Yankees fans. And my dad, I remember when I was little, kind of described that, you know, in the Philippines, the sports that they would get on TV are going to be the best teams and the primetime games. You're not going to watch, you know, some of the smaller market teams. So it was the Yankees for him. That's what he knew. And so when they came here, you know, those were sort of family moments. And then for us, particularly the Saints is what brought our family together. When my parents immigrated to the States, they moved to New Orleans. So that's where my brother and I were born. And my whole mom's side of the family, so all my family here in the States were all Saints fans, because that's, my brother grew up, you know, in the 80s in New Orleans as a Saints fan. And that got passed on to me even after we moved from New Orleans. So Saints games are definitely still to this day something that brings our family together. But I think it's just a common interest, because even to my parents, at least not so much now, but before, a lot of it was still kind of new. We were learning it together, especially things like American football and more Americanized games. We were learning it together. And when I worked at the Warriors, basketball wasn't a huge part of our family. We didn't have professional teams anywhere nearby where I grew up. So they quickly learned the NBA. They quickly learned the Warriors, and they became huge fans in the process. So I think a lot of it too was just, it was a growing experience for everyone, because it was new, I think, for all of us.
I think that's interesting, because different families that, you know, immigrate to the United States, they do things differently, because my family was completely different. My dad came from Argentina. And I remember watching the Super Bowl one time with my brothers, and my dad came downstairs and got mad at us for watching these American sports, because we can only watch soccer. That was the only thing we can watch. And yeah, that was like the whole thing. So for me, it is interesting when, you know, growing up thinking that that's normal, and then when you meet other people that were like, no, they were kind of more immersed into the American sports. I was like, this is, I mean, obviously going to school and talking about soccer was not the cool thing to do. So that was also a different thing. I kind of wish I had the situation like you had, but yeah, no. Let's also talk a little bit about your career in sports. You said you started in 2009, and you did mention the Warriors. Where else have you worked in sports? And also, I mean, working for the Warriors, you probably got to see a few championships here and there too. So yeah, how was that?
Yeah, so it started with that first internship in college. So with my university's athletic department, I went to a really small school. I went to University of Idaho. So not the biggest athletic program, still great experience nonetheless, probably the same I would have gotten at any collegiate athletic program. If anything, more hands-on probably, because it was such a small program. The summer before my senior year, I got the opportunity to intern for the Portland Timbers, probably hands down still one of my favorite experiences. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. Everybody asks me like when I first was attracted to or even like fell in love with the game of soccer. And I always tell the story of when I worked at the Timbers, because I went in not knowing anything, and I left still not really knowing anything, but I was definitely fascinated by all of it. That's what like really drew my eye. And I also tell the story, like I was there in 2012. So it was their second MLS season. And to this day, everyone knows what Portland Timbers games are like in the soccer culture up there. But it was just a really fun experience. And then when I graduated college, I got my first full-time job at the University of Oregon in the athletic department. So definitely opposite of where I first interned, major athletics program. And then I was there for a year before I got my job with the Warriors. So I was there for 4 years from 2014 to 2018. So yeah, I got to experience some really cool stuff. I know listeners won't see it, but like I tell people, these two boxes right here are my two, the boxes for the rings. The rings aren't in there. They're safe.
So wait, can somewhere. we for, Can we first say that it wasn't Kevin Durant that helped win the championships? It was you. Just, I mean, we can admit that, right? I know, yes. Yeah. Can we just admit that part?
He's one of my favorite players, but yes. Yes. It was a really cool time. Like, I was 22 actually when I moved to the Bay Area and started working for the Warriors. So I would have never expected it, like, to have those experiences and to get to do those things at 22 for a dynasty at the time, like, in hindsight, is just really incredible. So those are the teams that I've worked for. And then since then, once I left the Warriors, I got more immersed into the media space. So I was at 2K, then I was at The Athletic, and now I'm at Blue Wire.
Megan, we're going to talk in a moment about this amazing shirt that you design and these topics of representation and inclusivity. But before we get to that, I still want to sort of listen a little bit from your personal experiences and these jobs that you had. Were there ever any moments where, and actually, let me backtrack for a moment. This is a part that it's possible we may have to edit out, and that's okay. But I'm going to ask a question that if you don't feel comfortable answering, we don't have to answer it, and we can skip this whole part that I'm saying. But I was going to ask you about any specific things that you want to share, like being a woman in sports, a person of color in sports. I mean, there's a lot of areas where people like you and I are kind of, you know, not always treated as the most intelligent person in the room or the most experienced or trustworthy, et cetera. And so I just wanted to ask if there was experiences like that at any of these jobs or moments that, you know, challenges like that, that you want to share and maybe how you got through them. Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for prefacing that. I'm happy to share. So there have been, I probably can't pinpoint any, but there certainly have been times and places that I've worked where I didn't feel encouraged or was given the empowerment. I think that's a better word. I didn't feel empowered to use my voice and speak up about certain ideas. And if I did, I felt like they were often overlooked. And a male colleague could probably share the same idea and it would probably be taken with a little bit more interest. So I've definitely experienced that at many different places. And it's so unfortunate that you're sort of desensitized to it, because I think a lot of women can agree that they're just used to their ideas and voices being overlooked. So that happens. And I know that's obviously irregardless of sports, that's just an issue across the board. And I think another thing that I am happy to talk about is just oftentimes how women in the sports industry are treated as employees, as in regards to being made to feel uncomfortable. We hear so many unfortunate stories about harassment and just like really inappropriate advances in the space, because a lot of times women just aren't taken as seriously in the industry. And I've definitely had some experiences where like a male counterpart or a male colleague that I thought I could trust was just really inappropriate and made working really uncomfortable. And it's so unfortunate. But again, like, I actually had this conversation on a Clubhouse room a couple months back, and everyone was like, yeah, you know, we've all had that experience. We've all had at least that one time where we were made to feel uncomfortable, whether it was by an employee, whether it was by a player, that unfortunately happens a lot, whether it was by someone in the company that just made doing your job really difficult because you're a woman, and because that they didn't take you as seriously, you know, they were trying to hit on you or just be really inappropriate. And so it happens far too often. And I think it is important to talk about. It can be uncomfortable and some people aren't willing to share, and I respect that. I do think it is important to have the conversations so that people know that they aren't alone. I think with everything, to know that like other people have had the experience and talking about it is important, because like those are the type of people that we need to weed out of the industry. And I know that it's really scary for some people to call these individuals out as fear of retribution, fear of like retaliation. But it is so important, because like the person that I'm speaking of was later called out. I wish I had spoken up when I did. And like they lost their job years ago, and I don't think they're even doing anything in the industry. So to everyone's comfort, I do think these are important conversations.
No, I've worked in sports for a few years now, and I've obviously on the male side have seen this happen to female And I think one of the things I would like to ask you is, what's the message that you would give to people that kind of get turned off from sports completely? Because just like every industry, this isn't a problem that only happens in sports. It happens in pretty much everywhere. What's the message that you can say to continue with sports? Because sports is important. There's a lot of positives when it comes to sports. So what's like the positive in sports and you know, the encouragement to keep on working in sports for you?
I definitely know of a lot of people that have unfortunately left the industry because they didn't feel empowered. They didn't feel welcome. They didn't feel like that their voice mattered or that they were being nurtured to grow as a professional. I get that completely. I'm not even going to try and argue that that's not a problem in the industry. It is. I also, at the same time, see how inclusive it can be. There's so much further that we need to go. But as far as like networking and connecting and making friends with the right people, you know, every industry has its pros and cons, but I've met really incredible people in the industry, people that I consider friends. You know, for the most part, everyone's very kind, very welcoming. Like, we're all friends on Twitter, even though I've not even met half of my sports friends in real life. But I feel like I know everyone very well. So there's always that pro. And unfortunately, sometimes there's just the cons of, I know of a lot of people, and I'll even call it out, unfortunately, a lot of women that are very competitive and mean and make it hard for people to want to stay in the industry because they feel like they don't have anyone in their corner and their ally. So my message would be to, you know, really try and create a network and find people that you can consider family or like almost compartmentalize some of these experiences, because there are people out there. There is a big portion of us in the industry that like want to be inclusive, want people to succeed, want people to do well, and to know that like if anyone has that experience, it isn't telling of the whole industry. And that's such an unfortunate experience for anyone to go through, but to not get discouraged, because there are people that are going to be in your corner. And then I'll also add to that, like a lot of the people that I know that have left the industry, they did it for their own mental health reasons. So I completely understand that. Like, there's no point in forcing it if it just really isn't right for you and it really doesn't feel comfortable. Then there's no point in trying to force a job or a role in any industry that's not conducive to like your growth and your mental health. So I would couple those two, like always protect yourself and protect your peace, but know that if anyone ever feels discouraged, there are a lot of us out there that want to see you succeed, and like, do not be afraid to reach out. Like, there are good people in sports.
No, I appreciate you sharing some of those experiences, Megan, because, you know, sometimes, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, have had experiences like that in different work environments because of who we are and things that we can't change. And as you say, sometimes compartmentalizing is kind of all we got, you know, to be able to do our jobs and take care of ourselves in a way. But, you know, we still carry that. And I could kind of sense that as you were retelling some of these experiences, that it's something that can sometimes still affect you as you remember it. So I really appreciate you, you know, reliving that a little bit for the benefit of our listeners, who, you know, it can help to be able to relate and say, you know, I'm not the only person that this is happening to, and it's not because of me necessarily. It's sometimes because of the way that these systems are. And so we're going to talk a little bit more then about sort of now the positive side of the coin and how do we make things happen. And this amazing shirt that you designed, that Monty is wearing today in solidarity. But I'm just going to read a little bit from my notes so that our listeners know what we're talking about. So on March 8th, International Women's Day, you released these shirts that pretty much went viral right away. And I'm going to describe them again for the listeners. These shirts are all black and they read "more disabled, female, black, Latinx, indigenous, Asian, LGBTQ+ voices in sports." So it's all about that message of representation. And it's not just in the design of the shirt. So some of the proceeds of the shirt are going to some really great organizations, and I'm going to list them real quick. One of them is the Black Women's Player Collective, which is an organization of players and coaches focused on tackling racial injustices in soccer. and making the sport more accessible to Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. You also have, as a beneficiary, another org called Athlete Ally, an organization that works for greater representation of LGBTQI plus people in sports. And then I saw that you recently added one more org that's going to be benefiting from the sale of these shirts, an organization called Move United, which is a nonprofit organization that advocates for access to recreation and sports in our own community, so that people of any ability can have access to sports and recreation in their own communities. So I think it's so amazing that people can sort of wear this message as they walk around. They can wear them on themselves, and buying it also benefits these amazing organizations that are actually, you're not just putting the message out there. You're using the monetization of this product to benefit and to make real change. And I'm going to get to my question in just a moment, but and it's a question that I know you've been asked a lot, which is, what inspired you to design these shirts and hoodies? And before you answer, sorry, I've seen you answer in a few different places that that the idea came out of nowhere, that it was kind of random. And I wanted to just politely challenge that a little bit, because I mean, I think that sometimes we might be in the shower and something pops in and we feel like it comes out of nowhere, but really it's a result of your years of experiences and battling this and trying to turn it into something positive, I think. Now I'm putting words in your mouth. But I guess with that said, I want to rephrase that question to you. What inspired you to design this shirt? Is it really random, or what do you think led to this moment?
Oh, I love that. I love this challenge, because you're right. The shirt itself certainly was a random thought that came to mind, but it wasn't something that just came out of nowhere. It was obviously in the back of my mind. It's not like just one day I thought like, oh, you know what? Diversity is an issue in the sports industry. Like, no one's ever talked about it. Let's create something. You're right. Like, there was always a lingering thought. It's just the actual product came out of nowhere. So I do appreciate the challenge, because it has certainly been the years and years of my personal experience, but also more so just being a friend and ally to the more marginalized communities in the industry. Because I talk about this a lot. Like, yeah, I've had some difficult experiences working in sports, but I can definitely check my own privilege and know that my experience isn't anything like what a lot of other people experience, particularly Black men and women, and particularly the gay community. So I wanted to use the platform that I had and also just sort of collect the feedback and the experiences other people were sharing to do good. And, you know, I can point back to what we were talking about earlier. I know of people that have left the industry, and particularly they were Black women, because they didn't feel like they had a place and they didn't feel like their voice mattered. They didn't feel like they were treated fair. They didn't feel like they had an opportunity to advance in their career. So yeah, the shirt came out of nowhere. However, it was a long time coming, seeing people talk about it. And a lot of people have, you know, especially in the last year, we all know that last summer, so many organizations and companies pledged to be better at diversity, especially after George Floyd's murder. And we saw really nothing. We saw it was a lot of really empty performative action. And that's when a lot more people started becoming outspoken of like, hey, like, as Black men and women, we are treated horribly really at any job, like, please do better. And so again, like, the idea came to mind. It really happened that it was end of February. So I had just enough time, it was a little bit rushed, to launch it on a day that I felt like would really resonate with people. And yeah, like you said, it went viral that first day, which I was not expecting. I wasn't expecting any of it. But yeah, it was a long time coming, and I never wanted it to be about me. That's why I wanted to make sure that I partnered and gave money back to these organizations, because sure, we can spread the message. That's what's important. And I can monetize off of it. But if I can do good with that, if I can do good with the platform, that was my goal.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And we like having people on who, you know, you're ordinary people like you and I, we're all ordinary people, but you're kind of still using that message and the platform of social media to to have a good message out there. And for our listeners who would like to purchase the shirt or hoodie, you can do so by visiting morediversevoicesinsports.com. Please hop on that as soon as possible. They're super comfy, I can tell you for sure, because I'm wearing one right now. And correct me if I'm wrong, you have shirts, you have hoodies, and you also have stickers, right? Or did I just see that was like a one-off thing? I don't want to put, you know, words in your mouth.
No, I do have stickers. Yeah, they're not on the website, but they can contact me on social. I do have stickers, which is great because there's a lot of people probably like myself that are like, I have so many t-shirts, like I want one, but I don't need another t-shirt to my collection. So I do also have stickers for people that want to rep it every day.
No, that's good. Exactly. I mean, it's a message and there are definitely things that people can use every day. So I'm not going to say I'm going to wear this hoodie every day, but like I said, it is super comfortable.
It is very comfortable.
Don't think less of me if the next time I see you, I'm wearing this hoodie. Like, I swear I wore something else. Okay, I swear. Thank God this is a podcast, so they don't even know. They can't even tell. But okay, my next question too is, so as we mentioned before, you're currently the communications director at Blue Wire Podcast. How does the work that you've done with this campaign that you've got going on tie in with your work at Blue Wire?
Yes, it ties in so perfectly. So my role, I'll give a brief overview. It's hybrid, and it's definitely not like a typical communications job that a lot of people would think of. It's not as traditional PR and media outreach, but I think of it a lot more as like a brand communications role. Anything external facing that it comes to Blue Wire's name and brand and likeness. So I do help with I partner very closely with our director of social to really figure out what is Blue Wire's brand, making sure that we can bridge the connect between our network of podcasts and the brand, because we have over 160 podcasts on our network. A lot of people probably know of them, and a lot of people probably also don't know their Blue Wire. So making sure that we're connecting the brand to our network, in addition to our studio originals also. So that's just one of the things that I do. And I also help with talent outreach. If there's any athletes or content creators or influencers that I personally know, I like to get on those initial calls and really just talk to people and figure out, what are you doing? What do you want to see in sports media? And is there an opportunity for us to work together? And then a big chunk of my role is really, again, that brand marketing, communicating our brand to the world. And one of Blue Wire's big core values is diversity and its inclusion. And we, part of our mission statement is making sure that we're creating a space for marginalized and underrepresented voices to create content, either for fans or by fans that were just historically marginalized by other sports media outlets. There's a lot of stories that need to be told. There's a lot of voices that need to be in sports that other longstanding traditional sports media outlets just have been failing to serve. So it definitely goes hand in hand with my personal and my professional work. We want to make sure that we're telling stories of women athletes, that we're telling stories that, again, other outlets aren't doing, and making sure that we're always amplifying that message and everything that we do. And so it kind of works out well. It was actually one of the main reasons I wanted to come to Blue Wire when they were recruiting me. Was it was one of the first things they said in my initial interview. And, you can always suss out when people say that they're about diversity and when they actually mean it. And I have a really good gut feeling. And I just knew, I was they aren't just saying this. I really do believe it. And at the time, the slate of content creators that they had, this was, December, not even that long ago. But since then, it's evolved so much. I could already see what they wanted to do. And knowing that I could help make a difference is what I'm very excited about. So, we want to see the women's sports game grow. And we have a podcast coming out later this year that we're really excited about the Houston Comets, and making sure that we can say we support women athletes, but what are we doing? We also have, don't know if this is embargoed, but we have more studios originals coming out regarding women athletes that I'm very excited about. For Pride, we partnered with Athlete Ally, making sure that, again, such good friends. Shout out Athlete Ally. We've done a lot of things with them in my time here. But yeah, I think they have married together very well, both personally and professionally, what I want to do.
Well, thank you again, Megan, for sharing a little bit more about what you do with Blue Wire. And definitely, as a podcast ourselves, we want to definitely encourage our listeners to also listen to some of the podcasts that you have on Blue Wire, especially those that are really pushing for more inclusivity and more of these conversations. And, you know, in the beginning of our conversation, I made a comment about how inclusivity and diversity can sometimes be like superficially applied. And sometimes people will see, well, oh, but they have all these, you know, employees of color in this company. Isn't that representation? But then you start looking at, well, how is that structure? Are these employees at the bottom or the top? How much say and power in their company do they actually have? And so there's all these ways really that, I don't know what I call false diversity or surface level diversity, can be used to sort of, by a company to sort of say, look, we're doing it. We're being woke, but then you look at it a little bit closer, and it's more complicated than that. And we really see this ramp up, particularly during June, Pride Month, when all of a sudden you cannot see a commercial without a rainbow on it. And it's great that acceptance of LGBTQ plus values are becoming mainstream. Obviously, that's a great thing, but when that's used for a capitalistic end and there's no true benefit to that community, you know, it's really like capitalizing on the culture of wokeness without really giving back anything to the communities that you're kind of propping your commercials on top of or whatever it might be. And, you know, this happens with different months as we celebrate different people and all these capitalistic ventures jump on that representation wagon. But like, how, I don't know, what do you think of these companies? And I think I know what you're going to say about what you think about them, but how also as consumers and consumers of media, consumers of the world, how can we sort of be more alert, or what are some things to sort of look out for to differentiate when a company or org is doing this surface level representation versus true inclusivity?
Yeah, I really like that you called out that there's a huge distinction between the two, because what we're seeing a lot of is we're seeing a lot of diversity plays. We're seeing a lot of companies, like you said, hire for the diversity, check that box, and more often than not, their entry to mid-level, and when you look at the top, it's not as representative. What I think most companies are missing is the inclusivity factor of like, okay, now that you have diversity and diverse talent on your staff, what are you doing to make sure that they feel included and that they are going to also have the same type of opportunity to advance in the space as their counterparts, as their colleagues? So that's 100% what people are missing. Like, it is not just hire. Like, you can hire diversity all you want, but there's extra steps to it. And a lot of people are missing that. And yeah, we also see that a lot of times during cultural moments such as Pride or Black History or Women's History Month, as, you know, stark examples, where it seems very performative and it seems kind of empty. And so I try to pay attention to the company's values itself. Like, I can say XYZ company put out like this really incredible Pride commercial. Okay, cool. Let's do a little bit of research. Oh, we find out that they actually are owned by someone who's donating money towards anti-LGBTQ governors and stuff like that. We see that all the time. Like, okay, well, like, you obviously talk the talk, but you're not walking the walk. And then especially with, you know, the consumerism, I called this out really hard on Twitter around Juneteenth, of people giving Juneteenth as a holiday, companies as like a capitalistic gain, selling merchandise, when it's like, what are you doing to add diversity and inclusivity for Black men and women in your space? Like, it's not a money grab. But that's what we're seeing. We're seeing money grabs. And so Pride, for an example, I can think of a few places that I won't name off the top of my mind that were selling Pride collaboration merch. And then you look and you see that they aren't even donating any of the proceeds. Like, donating a small amount of the proceeds is honestly the bare minimum that you should do. And so that's why even when creating my shirt, I knew like, sure, I could probably make all this money off of it, but then I'm not going to be called out for like, you know, putting out a really important message and not doing anything with the platform. And that's what these, on a much larger scale, some companies and places do, is they create merchandise around whatever Pride Month it is, whatever history, cultural month it is, and then don't do anything either with that moment, use the platform, or more importantly, like, honestly, the money. Because now with, if we're using Pride as an example, with a lot more people coming out, speaking out, becoming an ally, people are wanting to support Pride. And then you find out that some companies don't even donate some of the profits. Like, I saw that a team was selling Pride shirts and they weren't even donating any of the money. So it's just, it's not a money grab. And that's what's unfortunate. I say that all the time. So I would just encourage people, like, definitely just don't hop on a moment. Like, do a little bit of due diligence and see, like, find out a little bit about that company and make sure that they're using the platform and potentially the proceeds to do good.
Here are the last couple of questions here. And again, thank you for that advice, because that's definitely advice that we all need to, you know, keep in check whenever we are, you know, consuming something or going to go purchase something. See, and it is hard, because honestly, there's not very many perfect organizations or corporations, I guess you can say, out there. So it's definitely, you know, it's a hard line to walk. But one thing I do love and support is following you on Twitter. And I invite anybody to follow you at @MegReyes_. And the reason I'm saying this is because your Twitter account, you like just lay it all out there, and you go after the people that are, you know, I don't like to cuss on this podcast, but I think people can understand. You get a lot of, and it starts with an S and it ends with a hit. And one thing I love is that you don't fear aggravating the small-minded, misogynistic community on Twitter. And whenever you do get a post, and I've seen, I follow a few people that do this too, that are women, and they just, if they get a DM, they share that DM, because I completely agree. You don't have the right to privately send something that's abusive, harassing, and then think it's a secret that you can not get like away with it. Like, that for me is one of the stupidest things about, I mean, there's a lot of stupid things about men. I'll say it as a man. There's a lot of stupid things. But yeah, what encourages you to keep that good fight going? And you know, it's not just, you don't just do it, you know, because of a one incident. Like, you constantly are at it, and I really, really appreciate that. What encourages you to keep on doing, and don't let these haters put you down?
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's so funny when people are like, oh, you should follow Megan. I'm like, oh, don't do that to yourself. Yeah, my social's definitely evolved. Like, a side tangent, I like will have these conversations a lot at work, you know, these sort of like speaking engagements and seminars about personal branding. And I always tell people, like, it's really important to identify, like, what you want your personal brand to be, what you want those values to be, and make sure that your content and anything you put out matches that. And so the point being is, when I did this exercise in December at my last job, those values changed a lot. Like, as far as like, these are the four things I talk about, because now it's really shifted towards like the diversity and the inclusion and like calling problematic people out. And, you know, I will say, like, it was scary at first. It's kind of scary to, you know, to come at someone, especially if they're like a large public figure. I know a lot of people have hesitations, particularly when it comes to their job. Like, they don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want to ruffle the wrong feathers. So it definitely took practice and reps and, you know, a little bit of personal grace of knowing, like, you didn't do anything wrong. And so what keeps me going is, as I kept doing it and I saw more and more people say, like, thank you for calling this out, knowing that, like, if I can help speak up for things that maybe others don't feel comfortable, don't feel like they can or should, or again, like, when it, you know, it gets weird. We know how social media can be with work. Like, don't want to say the wrong thing, but appreciate someone calling it out. Like, that's what keeps me going. And it's not even so much like the impressions and the engagements, but it sort of matters. And when I see that, like, oh, a lot of people are retweeting this, which means a lot of people agree, like, we need to call more attention to calling these issues out. So, I mean, I've definitely been on my, like, Twitter fingers game in the last few weeks, but there's just been so many, oh my gosh, there's just been so many things happening where I'm like, what is wrong with people? Like, why do you think this is okay to do and say? Like, you need to be called out for this. But yeah, I do it because, like, we have, we could go on a whole nother tangent about there's just so many people that think that they can hide behind anonymous accounts, that think they can say anything just because it's social media. Like, you can't treat someone that way. You can't talk to someone that way. It's always an anonymous account, to which someone was even saying the other day, like we saw after the Euros, like, you can't just be saying racist things behind an anonymous account. Like, there needs to be more accountability by these social media platforms, but that's a whole nother rant. But I call people out because, like, you just can't do it. And sometimes, you know, you pick and choose your battles because they're the trolls that live for it. Like, that's what they want, is they want to get you riled up. Like, they don't care if they're wrong. Like, they're that kind of dense where, you know, they'll say it with their chest and they'll stick to it. But, you know, the passion just comes from knowing that, like, again, we kind of need to weed certain people out, or at least hold them accountable. That's my biggest thing, is a lot of people are not held accountable for what they say and do. So if I can help start a conversation where people need to know, like, maybe your intention was good, but it was really poorly executed and you need to be held accountable for that. As scary as it is, I would hope someone would do the same for me. That's really what I want to do with my platform.
Well, and you're proof of why we need more diverse voices in sports and in so many other aspects of life. And there are some companies, like you said, pulling people accountable. And just like there has been some sort of surface level attempts at diversity, there's also, you know, some credit that should be given to organizations and companies, et cetera, that are trying to do true introspective work and are looking inward to say, are we perpetuating things like that? Or how can we do more? And obviously you're a person that's out there doing more to affect change, but what is the change that we need to see? And we'll focus on sports, but, like, you know, you're out there speaking out, and that's so important. But what is sort of, what would be our end goal? Like, in a perfect world, what would an industry that includes everybody look like? Well, I think we can all agree on how it would look like. Everybody would feel comfortable and valued, whether you're, you know, a woman, whether you're disabled, whether you're a minority, etc. But what, I guess the question is, what structural changes would need to happen in the world of sports, or what ideologies need to be shifted for this goal to be possible, if it's possible?
Yeah. So this is like a random thought that you guys will see. Like, I always have random thoughts and I like try and bring it back to the point. A random thought. Okay. So I had this conversation with my therapist the other week about something completely off topic, about like the idea of potential, and how like chasing a thing or a person's potential can be dangerous. And she was telling me how, like, well, it's not so much the potential that's a problem, because potential is something that people always kind of chase. But it's more of like the fantasy of like, are you just creating this false fantasy that like really is like unattainable? And in some ways, I really do think what we need to see in the industry might be a little bit of a fantasy. And that would include organizationally, like, more diversity at the top. Again, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, we see a lot of like people coming at the entry to mid-level. But then I talk about all the time, I'm like, you know, I could only imagine being early in my career, coming into an organization or a team, thinking I have a chance, and then looking at the top and seeing they look absolutely nothing like me. Like, that would be very discouraging. And even to this day, it's discouraging. It doesn't matter at what point you are in your career. So I'd love to see more people at the top and finding the right fit. Because again, like, just because you can hire someone based on like a certain intersectionality doesn't always necessarily mean that they may be the right voice. And then also, again, coming back to that inclusivity, like, it's a cultural thing. Like, from a tactical standpoint, you can hire the person. But culturally, there needs to be a lot of cultural changes in the industry when it comes to race, when it comes to gender. Specifically, we see far too many harassment issues in sports. Like, I swear, every month, there's some main character where women are coming forward and telling, like, very traumatizing stories about harassment that they faced. And so that's just on like the front office side. I would like to see on like the operational side when it comes to player operations, like a lot of times players aren't treated well either. When we look at women's sports, like when we look at travel conditions and lodging conditions, and I'm sure all of us have seen LFG on HBO Max, like equal pay, it's an issue. And then there's also the game day experience. Like we know of way too many incidents where fans are being abusive, and it's kind of similar to Twitter where they think they can get away with it, and there needs to be policy and accountability on behalf of teams and leagues. So like there should just be, every team and league says there's a zero tolerance policy. I've been there when I worked in the NBA of like problematic fans where it's like zero tolerance, but then they come back. It's an issue because you can ban someone, but that doesn't stop them from buying tickets under someone else's name. Like there needs to be a better policy. I don't know what that solve is, but there needs to be a better policy for like really just abusive fans. You know, we see it all the time. Somebody actually, when we were on, I did a Pride Twitter spaces and someone was asking thoughts about, you know, the Mexico chants and like how they're just like extremely derogatory and offensive, and like there needs to be better policies in place. Like it just there's just no place for any of it. So really what I would want to see in the industry might potentially be a fantasy, because it would need to be like a complete upside down change on the front office side, on the player operations side, on the game day side. Like there's a lot of progress that needs to be made. It's just far too many things just slip through the cracks and people get away with it.
Well, and it really goes back to the fabric of what's baked into our country, right? We were raised this country on white supremacy, and it still is in every fiber of every institution in our country. So, you know, it was a big question and it was a big ask, but you know, I think it's we have to imagine that world so that we know where we want to head to. And you're definitely one of those voices out there that's fighting that good fight. So, you know, we really appreciate everything that you've shared with us today and all these insights as a person that experiences these things, and an encouragement to other people who might be experiencing challenges, and also so many opportunities to come together and to unite intersectionally with other marginalized people who may be marginalized in different ways as I am, as we are. But that's, I think we need to keep imagining this equality utopia so that we can keep walking towards it. So sure, thank you again, Megan, for being that voice.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That means a lot. And to your point, yeah, I say like maybe it is a little bit of a fantasy, but that doesn't mean that we should stop. Doesn't mean I'll stop. Like maybe we won't see it in our lifetime. Maybe we'll see some of it, but you know, change is change. And if it means like slowly breaking the ground for the next generation, you know, hopefully one day it will happen. And you're right. Maybe it is a little bit of a utopia, but we'll keep working at it.
No, and I think I've said this in previous episodes too. Like, I know my privilege. I'm a white passing male that doesn't have the same obstacles that you two have. But I think more, if you're listening to this and you also are a white passing male, you should understand the privilege that you have, and also kind of understand and support messages like you, Mabed, have been doing in your field, and also Megan, like you've been doing in your field as well. And I mean, hopefully we can get quicker to resolving all of these that today seems like a utopia, hopefully, because honestly, it's going to take a huge support from the male community, especially the white male community, to be supportive of the situation. And don't just feel, I don't know, sensitive when Megan Reyes calls you out on social media. Just learn from that, please. But yeah, Megan, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I do want to say again, please visit morediversevoicesinsports.com to purchase a hoodie or a t-shirt. Stickers are not on that website. Don't go to that website for that. But you can hit her up through Twitter, and she'll set you up with that. But again, Megan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you both for having me. This was wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Radio Teco, the podcast of El Tecolote, California's longest-running bilingual community Latino newspaper. If you enjoyed listening to this episode and are looking for more of our content, please visit our website, eltecolote.org. And if you value bilingual storytelling and would like to support our next 50 years of community journalism, please consider making a donation or sign up to volunteer.